What risks do Jewish activists take when they publicly criticize Israeli policies or support Palestinian rights? You've traveled a lot and you live in a country where protests have been quite...
Well, we have all different kinds of attacks, starting from verbal to physical to financial. For example, in my town where I live, it was after October 7th when we started with very intense work on Palestine. And two of our people lost prestigious positions because of their activities. They were given a choice. If you stop, then it's okay. And both of them did not choose to stop. They continued and lost the position. These kind of things happen in many other communities. This is just from my little neighborhood where I live. This happens all the time. The Zionist movement makes sure that people should be very aware the price that they are going to pay. And still in all, people are brave and do what's supposed to be done. And again, coming back to that point, despite all intimidations, brave people are still doing what's supposed to be done. And this just shows you, you can imagine how many more people are behind these people, these active people. For each and every person you see on the street, there are thousands behind that individual.
Do you think the Jewish resistance to Zionism is growing internationally? And if yes, what signs support your view?
It is growing. We are seeing much more people today understanding way more than 2 years ago. But even, almost every decade we see a change. We see in the young generation. And when you see, the proof to that is when you see public activities, you see two things. You see more people out there. You see stronger activities, much more financial support behind it. There is so much more going on now than before.
How can Jewish communities worldwide help separate Judaism from state violence and rebuild trust with the Palestinians?
I encourage every Jewish individual, every Jewish community to make a public stance. What exactly the language should be, every individual should choose their own language, how they do it. But they should make clear that we don't support these crimes, we don't support the state of Israel, we are Jews and we are not Zionists. This is what's supposed to be done. Many, many Jewish people put a little sign on their door in front of their house. I'm a Jew, not a Zionist.
What would you say to Jewish people who reject the war but remain silent out of fear?
Well, I cannot judge those people. I can only encourage. We have to do more. Nobody should judge anyone because challenges are very difficult, and I'm not the person to judge anyone. I can only encourage. We need to do what's right. We need to do it for the sake of Almighty God. We need to do it for the sake of the oppressed people of Palestine and for the sake of the Jewish people.
How do you see the solution to the Palestinian cause? Would a referendum among the indigenous population of historical Palestine to decide the future be an ideal democratic solution?
I believe that this is not only an ideal solution. This is the only solution. We have to leave this for the Palestinian people. We have to stop all violence. We have to stop this occupation in its entirety. We need to restore all rights to all oppressed peoples. We have to allow all refugees to return to their homes, towns, and villages. And that's the only way to peace. And I'm saying this not only because the Palestinian people deserve their deserved rights, but this will be in favor of the Jewish people as well. We lived in Palestine before this state of Israel, and we didn't have a need for the state of Israel. On the contrary, the state of Israel has destroyed the safety of the Jewish people in Palestine. We would love to go back the old history and stop all these crimes, all these obstacles to peace, all these causes for conflict. And this is exactly what needs to be done. Let's leave it up to the indigenous population of Palestine to decide what government they want to have. If they want to have an Islamic religious government, we as Jewish people, we are happy, because we strongly believe that by a Islamic religious government in the Holy Land, the Jewish people would be way more protected and the Jewish religion would be way more respected than today in this secular so-called Jewish government.
What's your take on U.S. President Donald Trump's so-called peace plan that he came up with a few weeks ago?
I'm an American Jew. I'm Jewish by the religion I follow. I'm American by nationality. My religion requires of me to be respectful to the government where I live. I am respectful to my government. I'm respectful to my president, regardless whether I agree with each and every policy. That said, I can only say what my religion teaches me. The state of Israel is wrong. This has to stop in its entirety. This is what is the will of God, and this is what will bring good for everyone.
Last question. What is your view on Press TV launching a Hebrew language service? And do you think such a platform can help reach the Jewish community inside historical Palestine audiences with alternative perspectives?
This is an excellent approach. People need honest journalism. There are so many good-hearted, right-minded people that are open for the truth. But if there is no way for them to reach the truth, there is almost no option for them to come out with right decisions. This is an excellent approach, and I can only hope that this will bring so much good for humanity.
Rabbi, thank you so much for your time today.
You are very welcome.
faith, no, never. My faith, it's my voice. You may chain both my hands, but never my soul, no, never. My soul, it's my voice.
This is Iran Radio, and we have some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. Considered to be a verbal revelation by Allah, this is the actual word of Allah. The Quran is the holiest book for Muslims. Literally meaning the recitation, the Quran is widely regarded as the finest work in classical Arabic literature. Although the entire holy book plays a significant role in the daily rituals of its followers, the first surah, known as Chapter Al-Fatiha, is the most recited of the Holy Quran. This chapter, which consists of 7 verses, is repeated in daily prayers of Muslims and on other occasions too. Now we listen to the translation of this holy chapter. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Praised be Allah, Lord of the two worlds, this world and the hereafter, the beneficent, the merciful, and master of the day of judgment. You alone we do worship, and from you alone we do seek assistance. Guide us to the right path, the path of those to whom you have granted blessings, those who are neither subject to your anger nor have gone astray. And now the continuation of the programs. You are listening to Iran Radio. Coming up in this hour, we begin with the spotlight. Afterwards, we return with another segment of radio production. Up next, Spotlight. Stay with us. There is much to explore.
The Spotlight.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, this Thursday marks the beginning of the final stage of Sahand 2025, a major counterterrorism drill hosted by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps involving military units from the Shanghai Cooperation Organization states. The IRGC Chief Commander, Major General Mohammad Pakpour, says that Iran, without limitation, is sharing all the valuable experience that it gained from fighting Takfiri terrorism in the region with SCO members and observer states. Now, General Pakpour also emphasized the extensive and high-profile presence of military and security commanders from SCO partners in this exercise, a strong indication of interaction, synergy, and joint will to counter terrorism and enhance lasting security in the region. The fruits of a growing alliance within the SCO to secure regional peace and beyond is a focus of our Spotlight program. But first, here's a report.
Iran has launched a 5-day anti-terrorism military exercise in East Azerbaijan province. Sahand 2025 is conducted within the framework of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as a collective security mechanism to counter terrorist threats and militant groups. With 10 SCO member states participating, Sahand 2025 aims to safeguard peace, enhance military expertise, share counterterrorism experiences, build common understanding, and strengthen coordination among the member states' operational units. The Commander-in-Chief of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has emphasized the counterterrorism nature of the exercise, saying that the IRGC has gained invaluable experiences thanks to directly engaging with terrorists, which can be shared with SCO member states.
After overcoming the 12-day imposed war, and despite all pressures and threats, Iran has focused, with national resolve and a strategic outlook, on strengthening regional and international cooperation. Iran's adopted an active and responsible position in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in terms of collective security. The Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has directly fought Takfiri, separatist, and state terrorists, thus gaining valuable and practical operational experience. We are ready to share these experiences with the SCO member states. The scourge of terrorism is not bound to a certain geography. Confronting this threat requires joint measures, specialized exercises, and exchange of experiences. That's what Sahand 2025 exercise is all about.
The commander of the IRGC ground force has also underscored the anti-terrorist nature of the drill, noting that Iran has long been a victim of terrorism.
This program is an anti-terrorism exercise because Iran has been a victim of terrorism. 17,000 Iranian people have been martyred in terrorist operations.
The drill spans land, naval, air, and drone operations. In the naval phase, warships and rapid reaction units carried out maneuvers against speedboats and secured maritime routes. Ground and coastal forces rehearsed urban clearance, infiltration of militant positions, and neutralization of explosive traps. Reconnaissance drones and electronic warfare systems provided real-time battlefield monitoring, boosting accuracy and reducing risks. General Sergei Kisani, Secretary of the Executive Committee of the SCO Regional Anti-Terrorist Structure, praised Iran's role in combating terrorism and described the exercise as successful.
I can give everyone this assurance. Based on the level of planning and organization, I've witnessed the second phase of the exercise, both the operational stage and other stages, has been successfully carried out.
Beyond its military dimension, Sahand 2025 carries a clear political and strategic message. It reflects the collective will of SCO members to confront transnational terrorism. Iran hosting the drill highlights the country's regional standing and deterrent capability. Officials say the exercise not only boosts regional security, but also signals Iran's readiness to confront transnational threats and play a central role in Eurasian security.
And now for your guests. Joining us, Mr. Masroor Shahzadeh, political commentator and chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, joining us from London. And Mr. Ali Mourad, political commentator and writer, joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Gentlemen, hello and welcome you both to the program. I guess, Mr. Shahzadeh, we'll start with you out there in London. Your initial take, please, on Iran using these regional partners to forge this anti-terrorism alliance, one that supports, obviously, multipolarity where no member is another's vassal.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a concept which is understood right across the world, you know, in any region, European region or anywhere else around the world. People share the issues of regional security, and that will give them further security, further sort of ability to stand against those who are trying to undermine the security of not just one nation, but the region as a whole. And that is even more true when it comes to Western Asia. The fact is this, for too long, colonial powers have abused and undermined the interest of the region. And indeed, they took advantage of it. They sort of created adversaries between different nation, divide and rule, using sort of and promoting and creating sort of militant groups to undermine the security and it undermine indeed the ability of independence of those nation. And one of the reason, or one of the main reason, have been the fact that this is the oil-rich region. And another factor is actually is a corridor between East and the West, and indeed it's got a huge strategic sort of importance. And the fact that now Iran is initiating and encouraging the nations in the region to come together and address this sort of issue of security and anti-terrorism and coming together, making sure that the region is safe And the only way to do it is by participation of all those nations, because they are the one who will benefit from security, and they are the one who will benefit from unity.
Thank you there for your initial take, Mr. Shahjadeh. And Ali Murad, welcome to the program. Thank you for your patience. And Ali, your opening thoughts as well on the IRGC with a number of these SCO member and observer states taking this initiative to share expertise, intel, and form this alliance against terrorism and other possible regional threats without incorporating any extra regional actors in the process?
Well, first of all, it's important that to take into consideration that the security of Asia and the Asian states is important when we are talking about the shaping of the new world order. Because as the Americans are expressing openly that they are still working on penetrating the states, the sovereign states, especially in Central Asia and in regions surrounding China. I think that Iran has a perfect experience here to play a role in safeguarding the regional security when talking about the latest means of the terrorist groups that are trying to penetrate the sovereignty and the trying to shake the security of the Asian states. I think that Iran has a remarkable experience here to provide to all the states that are friendly, that are willing to cooperate on every level, especially the security and the anti-terrorist level. Of course, Iran, during the last 15 years, was able to possess this experience with all the operations that were carried out by the IRGC, Al-Quds forces in Iraq, in Syria. They have been helping local resistance movements and as well as local armies in deterring the terrorist groups, because we know that the Americans and the Zionists, they have been using terrorist groups to penetrate and to topple elected governments in the region, in the West Asia region. And the main example here to provide is Syria, because we have seen in the end that the terrorists who have been aided by the Americans and the Zionists, as well as other regional powers, was able to reach the power and to be the next leader of Syria with the help of the Americans and the, you know, and the babysitting of the Americans. Because we were dealing with an Al-Qaeda terrorist group. Iran was fighting this group in Syria, in Iraq. And for sure that the Americans will sure be, will try again to use the same tactic in other sovereign states. And I think that it is the right time now for Iran and other friends in the Asian continent to cooperate and to reach common understandings and to share experiences in this level.
Thank you, Ali. And I'm glad that you referred to and alluded to that the Syria involvement of Iran, because Mr. Masoud Shahjadeh, that's going to bring me to my next question. We've seen actors in the West persevere to paint this picture of the IRGC as this terrorist organization, while to Ali's point, through either direct involvement, as we saw in Iraq, or in an advisory capacity in Syria, the Corps spearheaded the fight against Daesh and other terrorism outfits in the region and is now sharing that experience, that invaluable experience with its allies in this coalition.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what we need to really understand that the world, the word terrorism and definition of terrorism, it's unfortunately it's been manipulated in the West. After 9/11, this was supposed to be a defined concept and defined sort of interpretation what terrorism is, but it has been sort of misused. So groups like MKO, who were terrorists, suddenly were taken out of the prescription, and they became a legitimate organization. Well, they've been involved in massacring huge number of people in Iran, in Iraq, and indeed even American citizens, American interests during the Shah time in Iraq. And so really what we've got now, it seems to be from the Western perspective, terrorists are those who are opposing the interest of the West. And indeed, freedom fighters are the ones that they identify with. And we are seeing that being played out in these separatist groups, et cetera, from one side, and then from other side, legitimate military of a nation is being sort of marked and marked or attempt to market as terrorists. In same time, 2 years of most visible genocide in the history of mankind is being sort of tolerated, and war crimes and genocide is being rewarded by financial support, political support, etc. The hypocrisy is very clear. What we are really talking about here is actually working against a definition of terrorism, which is understood and is indeed is legitimate, and not the interpretation that United States and West is putting on this. You know, that those who are fighting for the dignity and preservation of life in Palestinian lives are terrorists, and those who are committing the genocide are legitimate. This sort of hypocrisy should not play a role, and it does not play a role in the discussion we're having today. The discussion we're having today is very clear that you can't make one nation secure without cooperation between the regional powers. And this is what is happening in Iran now in the region, under the sort of direction of Iran. And indeed, it's going to bring benefit to everyone in the region and make everyone safe and secure.
And thank you, Mr. Shajad. And Ali, you want to weigh in on that? At the heart of these drills, these anti-terror drills, we have the IRGC completely demonized by the West. Their anti-terror icon assassinated in General Qasem Soleimani 4 years ago. And then anywhere the IRGC has gone, and any activity that it's been involved in, it's been basically at the invitation of Iraq and Syria at very desperate times for both those countries.
Well, we as the people of the West Asian nations who were attacked by the terrorism, we all know what were the blessings we had after General Martyr Qasem Soleimani went into Iraq to stop the invasion of Daesh in Iraqi provinces, as well as in Syria. General Soleimani helped the people of Syria, the people of Lebanon, to face those terrorist groups that were trying to invade the whole region. The Americans on the other side, by then, I'm talking about 2014, they were claiming that the elimination of the state of ISIS would take for at least 20 years. This was these were the words of the a top U.S. general who became later the U.S. National Security Advisor of the first Trump administration. I'm talking about General Michael Flynn. By then, they were trying to enable those terrorist groups to invade the whole region and to topple the elected governments and to shatter the national armies of the Syrian and the Iraqi states, as well as in Lebanon, of course. But we know that the resistance fighters who were backed by the General Qasem Soleimani and Al-Quds force were able to deter those terrorists, to defeat those terrorists in many battlefields. And I think this is the main reason why the Americans took the decision to assassinate General Soleimani, because he was a true defender of the sovereignty of the nations of West Asia. because he was a true defender against the terror that was backed by the United States and its allies. So the Americans, they went to designate the real fighters of the terrorists as the so-called terrorists, when they designated the IRGC as a terrorist organization. In fact, the Americans and the Israelis and their vassals in the region, they have been the real funders and aiders of the terrorists, because we know that the U.S. hegemonic project in the region is based on using many tools. They use governments, they use terrorist groups, and they use many other terrorist tactics. Of course, in the case of Iran, your report mentioned that there were 17,000 victims of terror inside Iran during the last four decades. We all know that Khalq terrorist organization is being aided by the Americans. They are being hampered, and they have a huge compound in Bosnia. They are being funded by the Americans and other regional parties. And the main mission of those terrorists is to carry out terrorist attacks inside Iran. I think that Iran has, made it clear that they cannot play easy when dealing with the terrorists. And during the last aggression on Iran, the 12 days war, we have seen that such terrorists, they can play a major role in the benefit of the aggressors. They have been using them as tools to enable the targets of the aggression held by the Americans and the Zionists. So it's important now that Iran and its neighbors and the SCO member states and other players would come together to share the experience here and to learn the lessons that Iran has been experiencing during the last years.
And those are very good points, Ali. Thank you for sharing them. And Mr. Shahjadeh, these drills underway, Iran says, for most of the part, they're in East Azerbaijan province. Some small dimensions are also taking place in the Persian Gulf. But Iran says that they're more than just a military drill. The exercise sends multi-layered strategic messages across political, security, and economic arenas for the region and a world. What do you suppose that message is?
Well, that message is very clear. It's clear that the regional governments and nations have come together, united, to work together to eliminate this sort of abuses abuses which have been supported and promoted by the West. And also it gives very clear signal as regard as legitimacy of sort of regional power armed forces in actually coming together to do this. I mean, look, General Soleimani, whatever they say in the West, which indeed is not even goes as far as considering him as a terrorist, but he was sanctioned, financial sanction under terrorism. But nevertheless, the fact is around the world and in the region itself, he got the largest and the biggest funeral that anyone could get. This is a military man who they accuse of being sort of involved in unsavory acts of terrorism. But in the region, he is seen in completely different way. And this exercises right now, it actually re-emphasized that in region, governments and people are recognizing the legitimacy of coming together of these powers and these armed forces to eradicate the greatest danger to the safety and security in the region, which indeed is being orchestrated and supported by the West and the Zionist state.
Thank you, Mr. Shahjadeh. And Ali, for years we've seen the usual suspects usually hold drills. We hear of them annually, U.S. and South Korea, obviously U.S. and Indonesia, the U.S. and the Philippines. We have these the MILEX, the European Union's annual drills they've had for a few years going now. We haven't seen anything new and unconventional. We have, but not often, albeit unconventional, we say today, but perhaps this is the new emerging normal for tomorrow. So what is the signal for a changing global order, these new emerging alliances?
Well, of course, we know that the Americans now, they are trying to affect the way that the new world order is going to shape, because they know they can't control the issue anymore. They know that other actors have already emerged, and they want to have their share in the new world order. The unipolar world order is over. And now, if you take a look to the Asian powers, you got China, mainly, you got Russia, and you got Iran, and you got Pakistan, you got other, you got India, of course. Those states, I don't think that the Americans in their vision towards the remaining decades of this century, they want any regional Asian power to be competing with them and maybe sharing the new world order with them. That's why, if you take a look, for example, to India, even if the Americans were signaling they're willing to be friends with India and to enforce the Indians and to help them economically and on other levels, they would not accept a thriving in India that would put the Indians to be their competitors. The same goes for other Asian states. That's why I think that this is the right timing now that all Asian powers to put the division, what divides them aside and come together to cooperate, because the West, led by the United States, they are looking into the East as if there's a threat to endanger their hegemony over the world order. That's why they are dealing with every state divided on its own. You know the saying that says, united we stand, divided we fall. I think this is the main proverb that Asian powers should keep in mind in the next decades, in the next years and decades, because the Americans are trying to topple all powers of the East. They don't want any cooperation to take place between China and other Asian powers such as Iran, Pakistan, even India. And of course, they don't want a Eurasian connection when we are talking about the major role of Russia here. That's why the war in Ukraine is still going. And the Americans, they are not actually proving that they really want to end the war. It's in their favor. That's why I think that Russia, China, Iran, Pakistan, and even India, they can make a different sphere of influence in the whole region, in the whole Eurasian region. And I think that the Americans know that, and they don't want to see such drills taking part among the Central Asian states as the Sahand 2025 today in Iran.
All right, gentlemen, thank you both. Time has gotten the better of us, but appreciate having you both on. It was a pleasure checking in with both of you. Mr. Masoud Shajad there joining us from London, and Mr. Ali Murad joining us from Beirut. And this brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
He was the most powerful vice president in the entire history of the United States. And he was also the architect of the Iraq War, a war where, as you know, there were no weapons of mass destruction. Welcome to Gringo. Let's get this show started.
Así empezamos, Gringo.
Secretary of State saying we're very close to a deal in the Middle East.
We've been talking about this often, of course, that we won the First World War, we won the Second World War.
Is he a Mexican-American that is offended by...
The architect of the Iraq War, who just passed away at the age of 84, was one of the most powerful vice presidents in U.S. history, known as Dick Cheney. During the September 11th attacks, he was taken to a secure location to oversee the country's governance from there. However, following his death, the media attempted to sanitize his image, when in truth it marks the passing of a war criminal.
Now that Trump has ordered the so-called Operation Southern Spear as a war against narco-terrorists, it is essential to study Dick Cheney, who has just passed away without facing any consequences. Cheney was the promoter and driving force behind the aggressions similar to those that Trump threatens to unleash. Although Cheney did not target drug traffickers, the strategy remains the same. In several countries, he supported the overthrow of governments he disapproved of. September 11th was high big moment. The mastermind behind the response was Dick Cheney. What was the response? To protect the United States from terrorists. The outcome was war, massacre, bombs, oil business, and the invasion of Iraq, the target.
There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us.
The weapons of mass destruction that were promised never showed up. Instead, what appeared were hundreds of thousands of corpses and devastation. Cheney's impunity teaches a lesson to the people of the world.
I have two guests whom I greatly appreciate and value for their knowledge not only about Dick Cheney, but also about U.S. foreign policy, particularly in terms of military matters. Here in the studio, I have Mario Barracamonte. Mario Barracamonte is an international analyst, and I welcome you, Mario. It's great to have you in Gringo's studio. And joining us from Colombia, dear friends, is Fernando Suarez del Solar. Fernando Suarez, out of necessity, has become a significant activist against the war. And he is also the father of Jesus, the first Mexican soldier who lost his life in the Iraq War back in March of that fateful 2003. My dear Fernando, it brings me great joy to greet you after several years of not seeing each other.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
In fact, I am the grateful one, and I will start with Mario Barracamonte here in the studio, if you don't mind, Fernando. Mario, Dick Cheney has just passed away at the age of 84, and the media in the United States have tried to whitewash his image. The most they have said is that he betrayed the Republican Party because at the end of his life, he began to ask for votes for Kamala Harris from the Democratic Party. However, they omit all the atrocities that many human beings continue to suffer from on planet Earth, especially the Iraqis, due to the devilish acts he helped unleash in that region of the world.
In fact, Dick Cheney is indeed someone we could label as a war criminal. He is the mastermind, the great intelligence behind this entire mess. Perhaps he is the one who most fervently pushed for the invasion of Iraq. And not just that, but he also unleashed, along with the extraterrestrials, all this hubris and the global disaster of invading seven nations, destroying their sovereignty and causing the deaths of countless people. I believe the level of cynicism is comparable to that of Madeleine Albright, which is sheer audacity. The sacrifice of 500,000 children following the criminal sanctions imposed by the U.S., along with the invasion, was deemed worthwhile by some, whereas others referred to it collateral damage in this very serious matter. This initiated a complete disregard for humanity, establishing a hierarchy of human beings, with Afghans and Iraqis being considered second-class citizens, particularly in light of the controversial events surrounding the Twin Towers. Renowned analyst Rima Sen was one of the first to boldly question the situation, which is now viewed as a coup within the U.S., comparable to the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I believe this marks a true turning point in history, and for some, the beginning of World War III.
Well, I am not sure if you are a lawyer, but you know well that today, justice in the United States stands as the platform above all others. Unfortunately, such individuals often die with absolute impunity.
First of all, it must be made clear that international law doesn't exist for the U.S. and Israel. The USA has always operated under self-imposed rules outside of international organizations that do not serve its interests, while the others are manipulated. Secondly, behind all of this lies a mindset, an idea, a philosophy, a way of perceiving life based on the manifest destiny and the notion of being chosen, of being a peculiar nation selected by God. This belief grants them a sense of impunity and a status that elevates them above the rest of the humanity. They are not subject to international law or any human norms. Instead, they create their own laws, which often allow them to sacrifice those they deem inferior or unchosen.
Poder sacrificar a seres humanos inferiores que ellos y no seleccionados.
Bien, estimados amigos, vamos a pasar con Fernando.
Well, dear friends, we're going to talk with Fernando Suarez del Solar. His son, Jesus, was the first Mexican victim among several others. I interviewed many Mexicans. One of them lost a leg. Others were left mutilated. And some other from lifelong post-traumatic stress disorder and psychiatric issues. In the case of Jesus Suarez, son of Fernando Suarez del Solar, he sadly passed away, being the first Mexican victim. Fernando, it's a pleasure to greet you again. Could you share with us, for those who are hearing your experience for the first time, how it impacted you to the point that you became a frontline activist in the United States against the lies that led to the war?
Well, I need to mention first that I used to tell people that I have problem with this war, even before it started. I told my son many times that as a Mexican, he didn't need to go to a war that I believed was illegal. We had that conversation back in February 2003. However, he told me that he had given his word. His grandfather and I, as his father, had taught him to honor a commitment, so he felt he had to go fulfill it. He thought there wouldn't be a war, that it was just a show of strength, similar to what Donald Trump is doing now with Venezuela. And then the fateful date of March 27th came. The war and invasion began, and on March 27th, my son tragically lost his life due to an illegal American bomb, as per the Geneva Convention, known as cluster bombs. This was devastating for me because I understood that the war was about oil, a geopolitical struggle for territorial dominance. They spoke of weapons of mass destruction, and the vice president emphasized that this was the most dangerous thing in the world, which is why American soldiers, along with the British and other nations, went to war. What happened? The only weapons of mass destruction found were made in the United States, deployed by American planes that bombed cities, schools, and hospitals. I spent 2 months in Iraq in December 2003, and in December 2004, I witnessed those hospitals destroyed by the criminal bombs of the United States. Therefore, we cannot claim that this was about freedom or improvement for the Iraqi people. Sadly, today Iraq remains in a very dire situation.
muy, muy lamentable.
Si pudieras regresar el tiempo,
if you could turn back time to that moment when you were talking to your son, knowing the harsh truths of an illegal war and everything that has happened since, would you insist more? I know my question might seem a bit silly, since we can't go back to that moment, but given what's already happened, what would you say to Jesus?
Well, surely I would have kidnapped my son instead of convincing him. I would take him to Mexico, cross the border, and kidnap him. The reality is that the American military recruitment system is misleading, especially very deceptive. And it manages to dominate and convince these young people, like my son, who have good intentions and love for their neighbors. They think, I will serve in the army to help children who are not under tyranny, and they leave with that illusion. Unfortunately, when they face reality, it is already too late. For my son, it was too late, and for many soldiers I personally knew, who you also met, others who are mutilated and have had their lives destroyed. Today, we see them living on the streets of the U.S., the most powerful country in the world, which has the highest number of homeless people in its territory. This is very important.
Mario, there is a historical addiction to war in the United States, an addiction in the sense that, as that famous book titled War is a Racket suggests, a book I highly recommend. What do you think about the fact that the United States consistently deceives its own youth, making them believe it's for the homeland and not for business, when in reality it is indeed for business?
It's clear that the main goal of war is business. It's all about the money. However, there are large corporations like Halliburton in Iraq that certainly drive this forward.
Led by Dick Cheney.
Exactly, and it involves Rumsfeld's associates and everyone else in the matter. Additionally, beyond this corrupt elite known as the Deep State, there are all these elements that formed a group which hijacked the public institutions of the U.S., as they were everywhere, in the Pentagon, in the State Department, in the CIA, all over. Regardless of that, it reflects the idea of a cult of violence that I believe is historically rooted in that society, justifying violence and glorifying it. The violence that shapes the youth's upbringing, the violence that serves as a way of perceiving life, the reverence for weapons, and so on. I believe that both elements come together, these corrupt corporations that have spread war everywhere, the general glorification of violence, and the love for it. In the midst of this, there exists a significant hypocrisy, as all of this can be masked and can be deceived many young people, as has been stated here. They can mislead many youths under that hypocritical guise that the United States has operated under, not just now, but for many years. The very invasion of Mexico and the dismemberment of our territory also stems from this. It is not merely a violation of sovereignty, but a disguise that they always use to cloak their actions, which are inherently wrong, yet appear benevolent to everyone. So there is no such democracy, no such freedom, and nothing at all. The only real freedom is what becomes the license of large corporations to rule, first establishing themselves through violence and then ultimately engaging in plunder and imperialist extractivism, which is well known and was inherited from England, because in the end, England practiced that same policy in its empire.
Absolutely, Fernando. Vice President Dick Cheney, although he served under four U.S. presidents, is undoubtedly thrust into global fame for being the vice president of George W. Bush. He supported torture and claimed there were weapons of mass destruction. I firmly believe, without fear of being wrong, that it was a deliberate lie, not a mistake, as another criminal accomplice, Jose Maria Aznar, stated a few years back in Spain. What do you think about this issue? How can such sinister figures die without facing consequences, while the media attempts to clean up the image of murderous individuals who should be in prison, like Tony Blair and Bush himself, among others?
Well, it's clear that, as mentioned, the United States has a double standard. It presents a very media-driven narrative on one hand, while on the other, it is invading, attacking, usurping, and stealing. This man who dies in impunity, just like him, several previous U.S. leaders and generals have also died with impunity. The attack on the Twin Towers was, from the very beginning, suggested to be a self-inflicted attack, a coup, as we pointed out. But what is happening in this country, the United States? Unfortunately, the education that has been provided since before the Vietnam War has taught the masses that if you are poor or a minority, you will be at the bottom, serving in the military, while I, as a white, upper-middle-class individual, will be the one in control. What I say becomes law. The doctrines of the United States have always been this way. And today, under Trump's leadership, we are witnessing the full bloom of that total discrimination, the racism that was once silent among white people, now attacking our migrant brothers. This can be traced back to the Vietnam War, where they targeted and kidnapped the Pachucos, those Pachucos, when they killed Salazar.
Yes, Ruben Salazar back in 1970.
It is well said that history is not being written today. It is being repeated today. That is the issue. Regarding the Iraq War, from my perspective, it stems from my personal experience of losing my son or having gone to Iraq and witnessed death, feeling terrified under bombs. This has been one of the worst massacres committed by the United States, not counting the extermination of Native Americans during the U.S. Midwest invasions.
Junto con Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney autorizó el waterboarding.
Alongside Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney approved waterboarding and other forms of torture, including those that took place in the Abu Ghraib prison, which Seymour Hersh initially exposed and later became globally infamous. Why, with so many examples of this policy and these types of situations, is there still a significant number of people in the world who seem unaffected by it? This question also applies to Mario, who will speak after you. Why is there such indifference? Currently, we are witnessing Mr. Trump together with Mr. Netanyahu committing atrocities in Gaza. Yet there are still people who defend them, Fernando. After this, I will speak with Mario.
Yes, it's similar to what happened in Iraq. When the Americans arrived in Iraq, they claimed they were welcomed with flowers as they toppled the statue of Saddam in the main square of Baghdad. It's exactly the same. People were saying, yes, they are liberating Iraq. We need to support them. We have to back them up. But they didn't see the massacre. What I don't understand about humanity today is that something worse than what happened in Nazi Germany is occurring right now, because all the Palestinians are being killed, including children and women, etc. Thanks to the media, the internet, and platforms like Facebook, everyone is aware, but they always have an excuse. They say we were attacked first. And while the United States claims that this support is good, it suggests that everything is fine. As is mentioned earlier, these two, I mean Israel and the United States, they stand above the law, and they will continue to do so, especially when the United States has a corrupt president, a criminal who has been convicted of 32 or 34 crimes, yet he is the leader of a country that is supposedly the most humane and democratic. I just don't understand American democracy. So what is happening? It seems that the world people are not studying, not reading the history, and they are completely unaware of what's happened in the history. It is repeating itself, and I am afraid. I am very afraid that history is repeating itself. Nowadays, Venezuela, Colombia, Gaza, and there are other places in Africa, etc.
Mario Barracamonte.
Pues yo creo que en primer lugar
I believe that, first and foremost, the issue is that impunity has become the norm rather than the exception. Take Kissinger, for instance. I think he is the most sinister figure, dying in his own bed, surrounded by admiration from everyone, which is a recurring